Do you know that feeling when everyone is talking about a movie that you haven't seen? Have you ever felt compelled to make some vague comments just so you can join in the conversation? Well, what if you were in too deep? Do you think you could convince everyone that you'd seen it? Or do you think your version would be so much better that no one would care? Here at Faking Movies, we're always the ones who haven't seen the movie.
Anything you can do better. I can do anything better than you.
No, you can't.
Yes, I can.
No, you can't.
Yes, I can.
No, you can't.
Yes, I can. Yes, I can.
So, I guess welcome back to Faking Movies, sons of bitches. We are on episode The Opposite of Heaven Teen. Mm.
It worked better the second time when yep. we already knew the joke.
Yep. Yeah. That was, again.
Sorry, just, everyone else.
Just dumb as hell.
Let you a little peek into the creative process. So I am, always, I'm Lee.
Wait a second. The fact that we had to, that wasn't off the cuff. And it was still.
Yeah, we had to come up with
ahead of
a
time.
Pun related around the number 17. Yep. Yeah.
Wonderful. Okay.
Only gets easier.
Mm-hmm.
Yeah.
Well, as always, I'm Lee, joined here by my dear friend, Zach. Hey, Zach.
Hey, guys.
Joined as well by my resident son of a bitch, Seth. Hey, Seth.
Whoa. I mean, hi, everybody, but uncalled for.
And. Doing things a little different today, as Zach mentioned in our last episode, we have a tag team joining us. Why don't you guys let everybody know who you are? Say hello.
All right. Well, I am Kanan, and I am joined by my boyfriend, JG.
Hello.
Hello, guys.
Nice to have you on.
Thank you for having us.
Love the show.
We're very excited about the tag team. Oh, no.
We're huge fans.
That's so sweet.
Wait, are you the two listeners? You're the two. Oh, my God. We figured it out.
Have you guys each bought 25 phones and subscribed to the podcast?
The guys at
so much.
The guys at AT&T know us very well.
Yeah.
Of course.
So, just before we get going today, couple little tidbits. So, as always, please subscribe to our Twitter, Instagram, and YouTube channel. Twitter is at Faking Movies. Instagram is Faking_movies. And on Twitter, just search for Faking Movies Podcast. We're trying to keep them updated, put some good content out on them. And I have a little bit of an announcement here. Apparently, someone has won the contest to figure out where I come from. Now, a user...
Space.
Yeah. Space. I'm from Uranus. I don't know if you knew that about me.
Yeah.
That's why I'm so off balance all the time.
Oh, you went a different way with it. That's cool. All right.
Yeah, you didn't think I was going to go with that joke, did you?
Good.
So,
because it has a different axis of rotation.
Yes,
I got it. Oh, man. Okay.
Ugh. Yeah, see? Also, all of its moons are named after Shakespeare characters.
Got the space corner out of the way.
Yeah. So anyway, a user or poster on our WordPress page, which, by the way, guys, we have that too. We'd love to get some comments.
Yeah.
By the name of Willie Barry, has guessed a town close enough to my hometown that I'll consider it a win. So if you want to email our show's email address, Zach, what is that again?
Oh, God, don't put me on the spot for that. Faking.movies@gmail? What's that?
I think that's
that sounds right.
Yeah.
Yeah. With your information, we'd be happy to mail you a, I would be happy to mail you a Scream sticker, based on the classic Seth goof from episode 10.
Yep. And you'll be the fourth person ever to own one. So
yeah,
very exclusive.
The same sticker that graces our laptops.
It's true. Yeah.
Now, I also would like to point out that I feel like whoever this person is probably cheated, but that's fine.
Yeah.
I'm going to keep dropping hints since nobody goes on the WordPress anyway and see if someone else wins.
Yep. I like this reverse psychology. This is good.
Yeah. So
don't go to the WordPress. Real secret stuff there.
Keeping up the grand tradition of being openly hostile towards our listeners.
You know what? Like, I'm okay with that.
Yeah, I mean, it's all we know.
Yeah, it's all we know. It's all we got.
So, shall we? Should we get going? Does anybody have anything else they want to bring up?
Nope.
Seems good.
Well, why don't you guys take us away?
So, what movie are you doing, and which actors did we give you?
So, we are doing The Fly. And we were given the actors and actresses, mind you, of Jeff Goldblum, Gina Davis, and John Getz.
Mm-hmm. Yep.
Set follow-up question. Do you know who the third one is?
So I had to look him up. I did not look into him. However, I did see his picture and have no idea who this dude is.
But his picture was enough for us to create a whole back of character story for him that is rich.
I think that it's going to be fairly accurate. I'm just going to go out on a limb and guess that.
Yeah.
Did we give you the director at all?
No.
Oh, that feels like a real big oversight.
I know. Okay.
We'll get into this.
You might have given it to us. We might have just totally disregarded it in our entire synopsis that we've written here.
You know what? I find that our best episodes involve our guests ignoring us, which is
ourselves ignoring each other. Yeah.
No, that's true.
Yeah.
And that's totally justified based on how shitty we treat them. So.
Yeah. Oh man, one of these days, one of us is going to get a movie and just show up and do a different movie entirely. Like, I'm doing the goddamn Lion King, and you can't do anything about it.
You watched Robin Hood Men in Tights? I watched Robin Hood Prince of Thieves.
Robin Hood Prince of Thieves? Oh man, starring Kevin Costner and Alan Rickman?
Save it, Seth. We've got a lot of ground to cover.
Sorry.
Save it for a later episode, perhaps?
Yeah, maybe.
Yeah, he'll definitely do a movie he's for sure seen 100 times. Yes.
Anyway. Right.
Yeah, sorry.
All right, so for this film, this grand masterpiece, The Fly, we've decided that this film is set in the 80s. It takes place in a small town outside of, you know, mainstream Chicago. And our movie opens up and it's dusk. The air is thick with mist, and in the far, far distance, you can hear sounds of gunshots. Pew, 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 pew. A yellowy street lamp.
Sound effects. Ooh, I like it.
Yeah, a yellowy street lamp illuminates the sidewalk as Malcolm, main character.
We didn't say who it was.
Just kidding.
All right, so.
So is Jeffy Blooms the main character, I assume?
Yes.
And his name is Malcolm.
And this is a crossover, apparently. Yes.
Is Malcolm his middle name and Ian is his first name by chance?
Yeah.
He's kind of like Enya, he just goes by Malcolm, you know. Just that's it. We've decided though that he works at a library, and he's a struggling writer, and he is our tragic hero. I would like to point that out as well.
Great.
Tragic. Oh
yeah.
No.
And I don't know if should we go into the other main characters now or kind of bring them up?
No, there's
as
only
get
two
there.
More. Let's just put them out there.
All right, we'll just put him out there right
you
now.
Guys want. Yeah.
So Gina Davis is our leading lady, obviously. She is our delightful diner waitress, and her name is Claire Curtis. And then John Getz is our published writer / douche. And we've named him Simon.
Yeah, that was based on his picture I said he looks like a douche.
He looks like he's committing some serious douchebaggery. So Simon is his name.
Sure does.
He looks like the author that has a picture on the inside of the book jacket.
Yes. So Malcolm is walking home from the library where he works. Like we said, gunshots echoing in the distance. As he's walking past this infamous alley where crime is just strewn about all over the place, he's hurrying past. And then when he comes across his favorite diner, which we've aptly named the diner,
naturally,
he stops off for his nightly coffee and Reuben. And he rolls inside and meets our leading lady, Claire.
Claire.
Oh, shit.
Wait,
now she's...
I do have a question.
Sure, go ahead.
Yeah, what's your question?
His nightly Reuben?
Yeah.
That's a lot of Reuben.
He dies at the end from hypertension.
Is this man made of sauerkraut by the end?
Wait a second, Lee. You don't eat the exact same sandwich every single night?
I'm not monk.
If you're gonna go for a daily sandwich, though, a Reuben is a pretty solid choice. I mean, let's be real.
Oh, hell yeah.
It's up there.
As far as staying alive, it's pretty bad.
Okay, well, if he's really health conscious, he can go for the heart-friendly Rachel as an alternative.
Marginally better, sure, yes. Okay.
Yeah.
So he rolls up to the counter, and of course Claire greets him like she normally does every evening with a comedy, you know, gunshots again, Malcolm, on 58th Street, and he says, yeah, softly. So she asks him if he would like the usual, and he makes a joke like, let's make the coffee strong this evening, like ultra 93 strong. Petroleum reference.
Yep, great.
Because it's going to be a long night.
Okay.
Yeah. I'm familiar
Octane.
With that one.
Okay. Yeah. Gotcha.
Wait,
gotcha.
Hold on. We can't shit on anyone for making jokes that no one understands. That is the thing we do all the time. Also, I very much appreciate that joke. So, yeah.
If I'm being totally honest, I stopped myself from making a joke about, I went to my barber, asked for a Rachel, and he put a sandwich on my head.
Oh, friends. Topical.
Yeah.
Wow. Okay.
Well, I'm glad because our screenplay/synopsis is riddled with bad jokes.
Perfect.
Good.
Oh, excellent.
And way too much dialogue for some reason. We basically wrote a screenplay in the end of it, which we were like... I think we took this too far.
Oh, no. No such thing. No, I love it. Yeah,
put a pot of that 93 on. We're going.
See? There you go. Doing it.
And now it's a thing.
Yep.
Yeah.
All right. So she casually asked him if he's finishing up his novella that he's been working on for the last, what, JG, 18 months now, probably?
Oh, brutally long.
Brutally long time to be finishing this. So he replies he's trying to, you know, he's trying to get this book taken care of because this is his last chance to make it as a writer. If this flops, he's done. He's over with this angle of his career. Mm-hmm. And she, of course, encourages him and advises him that he should never give up on his dreams. Never give up, man. Never.
That's a very 80s sentiment for sure.
Yeah.
Oh, yeah. Yep.
So, of course, Malcolm walks over to the end of the counter, far away from all the other couples and families that are sitting at various tables, having normal conversations, talking to their kids or their spouses and partners. And he sits alone in the corner, drinking his coffee, waiting for his sandwich, listening to the conversations that go on in the near distance. And here we really want to picture that Malcolm is the silent observer, the outcast. He just kind of watches and takes notes in his head because he is the fly on the wall.
This is when the title comes in.
Great.
The Fly.
Yep. Yeah.
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 Oh,
you
of course.
The title
of course.
Card.
Yep.
Cool.
Awesome.
Did Robert Altman direct this? Like, you're talking about, like, here's all these conversations in the background that are in the movie, but we don't know what they're saying.
Yeah,
like,
yeah,
that is.
You know, was,
I think we found your director.
We're going from, like, an 80s Wes Anderson? No? Too far? No.
Oh.
I don't know. I think it works.
Too much. All right. You guys say it works.
We'll come back. We'll come back.
Nothing is too much. There's no such thing. Yeah.
Yeah. Yeah. We made a movie about a dildo one time.
Yeah, well, hey, one of us made a movie about a dildo. Okay. Okay.
Oh, man. I missed that Iron Giant.
coming to stores winter 2017.
Do you really think we could get those into production that quick? Because
absolutely
I'm on
not,
board.
No.
Oh, shit.
Oh, dear. All right.
All right. So Malcolm sits in silence for some time. You know, he enjoys Claire and her company and her kindness and her smile. He doesn't appreciate that much in the way of people, but he definitely prefers her company. He gets her and she gets him. And all he wishes desperately is that he knew how to talk to her. So it's raining outside and he thinks, fuck, now I have to walk home in the rain. And then in walks Simon.
Simon! Da, 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 da.
Yeah, man, I really hope that picks up on the recording.
You definitely shouldn't talk over it when you do it.
Yeah. Oh, we can put it in post. I'm going to need some like mini MP3s after
sounds
this.
Good.
Yeah. So in walks Simon. He's Malcolm's college roommate. And as we mentioned earlier, a douchebag. He's wearing a blue blazer, a V-neck t-shirt, dark jeans, and belted with a giant, unnecessary belt buckle. So
excellent.
Yeah, so you can clearly see the picture that we're painting here. So he plops down next to Malcolm at the counter, stares at Claire, and he's like, hey, sugar, what does a fella have to do around here, around this place to get a decent cheesecake? Of course she rolls. Of course she rolls her eyes, and Malcolm slowly turns towards his sly grin, and she says, "Like, hey Simon, what brings you to this neck of the woods?" And Malcolm,
because she's a good waitress, and she's just gonna brush it off.
Gotta do it.
She's entertaining the douchiness. Yeah.
Unfortunately, this is the kind of shit that servers have to put up with.
Yeah, for sure.
Exactly. So, so Simon replies that he's just checking in on Malcolm. You know, he calls him stuff like little guy or whatever, and then he turns back to her and he goes, "You know, would you kindly pass me a napkin?" So she brings out his cheesecake. And of course, like a common douchebag, he just shoves it into his mouth, kind of like pizza, like picks it up and just kind of right hoovers it straight in there.
Wait, that's, is there any other way to eat a cheesecake?
So you're saying you just Ninja Turtle all your cheesecake?
Yeah, naturally. I mean, usually I have a slice of pizza with a slice of cheesecake on it to truly Ninja Turtle it.
But the pizza's flatter than the cheesecake. So, like, the pizza...
He makes a taco with the slice of pizza around the cheesecake.
Yeah.
Isn't there that, like, that one, like, drunken sandwich you get in D.C., I think on U Street, that's, like, a hot dog covered in chili wrapped in a slice of pizza?
Wait, what?
You're doing Taco Town again. This happens, every five episodes. God damn it.
I think it's... Maybe it's called a U Street burrito. I don't remember, but it looks excellent, and we should make it next time we're all in the same place.
Hell yeah!
Yes, we should.
Sounds like a general heart attack special.
Yeah.
Yep.
It's the way we live, sort of. Well, for the time being, until
or
we
die. Yeah.
Yeah.
Until we die. Yeah.
Sorry.
So this douchebag just jammed cheesecake.
He's jamming
cheesecake
into his mouth, and he wants to go see Malcolm's novella, what he's written so far. So Malcolm reluctantly gets up. You know, he hates leaving Claire, but he walks out in the rain with Simon back to his lowly one-bedroom apartment. I like to think of it as a flat, but we're not in the UK, so I don't know how appropriate that terminology is at this juncture.
It's
a
renovated, like, piece of a warehouse.
Yeah, basically.
Yeah, like an artist's loft.
For sure, concrete floors, the random tapestry on the walls. He's got a little lamp and stuff, and maybe some incense burning somewhere.
It's like a prison cell.
Okay, I mean, essentially.
It's Chicago.
That's right.
Yeah.
So, of course, he lives on the sixth floor, and, you know, his landlady is one that keeps a close eye on all the visitors. So once Malcolm and Simon go upstairs, they walk over to his desk. You can notice that Malcolm's papers, you know, he's the kind of guy that's got his shit just strewn all over the place. He's got like 9 different coffee mugs. They're all half empty. There's an ashtray next to his typewriter loaded up with butts. You know what I mean?
Okay.
So of course, as soon as they get up there, Simon is the kind of guy, he's been drinking heavily all night anyway, and he just wolfed an entire cheesecake. So he passes out on the couch, and Malcolm just goes on editing his novella. So now it's the next day. So the next day, Simon wakes up. He reeks of booze, sweat, and icing. Because I threw that in there because of the cake, obviously.
There we go.
So, of course, Malcolm shows him a couple pieces of his novella. Remember, he's super proud of this. This is his final shot. He's been working on this thing forever. And now Simon's starting to scoff and critiquing at it. So Malcolm, you know, he's listening quietly. He doesn't really give a shit what this guy thinks. So they're college roommates, and he's basically the closest thing this dude has to a BFF, you know. So he's kind of...
It's sad.
Yeah. He's dutifully entertaining his company. Eventually Simon just says, like, you know, man, why don't you just get in touch with my editor? She'll help you out. She helped me get to where I am now, because Simon's the picture guy on the inside of the panel on the book, dude, or whatever. And Simon starts declaring all this stuff.
He sold out. I get it.
Yeah, he's, totally. for sure. And he's obviously still drunk from the night before.
Sure.
So Malcolm reluctantly agrees to go and meet with his editor. He's like, yeah, I'll call, whatever. And then he just kind of kicks him out so he can be alone. Because obviously Malcolm's the kind of dude that prefers to be alone.
Definitely does.
Mm-hmm. Yeah, for sure.
Yep.
So once Simon left, Malcolm reviews, you know, his final chapter and his final edits. And it's all quiet except for those gunshots from the 58th Street Alley. Always seem to be happening. And then he hears a sound. He looks around and he sees a common fly buzzing around. And it lands on the wall and it seems to be staring at Malcolm.
Directly at him.
Directly. And Malcolm knows he's alone, but yet he isn't. And there were no windows were open. Uh-huh. So how did the fly get in? And then, so we move to later that night. So Malcolm's looking over the final draft of his novella, and he thinks it's damn good. It's his last shot. It's the best he has right now. His job at the library, you know, it's paying some bills, but people don't appreciate literature. And this is literature.
Not like they used to. They don't.
Goddamn Netflix.
So this is his masterpiece of his lifetime. Everything he's observed throughout his years but never been a part of, it's all reflected in his work. The stories, the people, the love, family, belonging, you know, none of these things have ever been a part of Malcolm's life, but he can finally write about it as if it were.
Okay.
And so the fly is buzzing in the background and lands on his desk, and they lock eyes, and it makes a few nodding movements as if the fly is congratulating him. And Malcolm seems to know this. The fly gets it. The two of them are alone and yet not alone.
Okay.
So now Malcolm.
So this is an art film.
Oh, for sure. Yeah. It's
a lot of things.
It's a lot of
things. We don't even know what it is.
We kind of just, the train was pulling into the station with the story, and then we just kind of took off into nerddom with it, and then we never came back.
It works. It works.
So Malcolm, of course, is super excited now. He's heading off to the diner to tell Claire about his work. And on the way, he thinks to himself, when this book gets published, they can finally be together. They're going to move into the good part of the city, far away from the 58th Street shootings. Pew, 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 pew. Come on, you see the gunshots.
Do one of you guys, like, hate a sports player?
I guess.
Hate a sports player that was 58, or like, is there some significance to 58?
No,
it's coming up
a
bunch. I'm just curious.
Came top of mind.
Yeah, yeah.
Like the type of street that someone would get shot on.
Yeah.
The higher ones are often the worst ones.
Yeah. I mean, it's right next to the 59th Street Bridge, that song that Simon and Garfunkel sang.
There
about.
We go.
Yeah.
Sure. Yeah. Okay.
Yeah. And it's only 17 more than 41 shots, the Bruce Springsteen song about a kid getting shot.
Well, yeah. All right. Yeah.
It's opposite 17 more.
You guys have put a lot of thought into numbers that never even crossed our minds in terms of references. Yeah.
And that's what all the film nerds will be doing for years after this movie comes out.
Yeah, that's true.
That's true.
Yep.
Have you not seen the documentary Room 237?
Yeah, that's kind of what I was thinking about.
Yeah.
Mm-hmm. Yeah.
Ridiculous. Okay, sorry. Anyway.
No, good. So he wants to get away from the shootings, the couples that bang next to the dumpster, the drug dealers, the general garbage that is his
Whoa,
life.
Whoa, wait, you didn't mention on. That part.
It's a terrible
you know that
man.
Unexploded hydrogen bomb that's just sticking out of the road.
Yeah, basically.
Just,
is it did you guys watch season
that
one
bang
of the
next
tick?
To dumpsters, or is it like sex workers that bang next to dumpsters?
I leave that open to interpretation.
Okay, yeah. sure.
Cool.
I mean, I do want to say this show is pro sex worker rights, anti Andrew McCarthy rights.
Yeah.
That's a throwback to St. Elmo's Fire.
True fact.
Oh, right on. Yeah, we've done a bad one of those. That's true. Yeah.
Ugh.
All
right. Andrew McCarthy. Ugh. What a weird creep.
Yeah, that fucking movie, man.
Yeah.
All right. So Malcolm walks into the diner. And as soon as he locks eyes with Claire, as soon as he walks in and sees her, he notices that Simon is sitting not only in the diner, but at his seat at the end of the counter. And he's talking.
Oh.
He's talking
Ooh, I like
to
it.
Claire
Ooh.
While he's having coffee. So Claire kind of shoots Malcolm this confused, quizzical expression. And he just kind of storms in, sits next to Simon's chair. And he excitedly tells Claire that his novella is finished. And she smiles. She's giving him a high five. And Simon, who's obviously still intoxicated, just says something like, "That garbage," while he's chomping away at his sandwich. And he says to him, "You know, I thought you were going to call my editor, Susie. The whole second chapter has to be rewritten, and your character development is shit."
Classic Simon.
So Malcolm says,
yeah.
Classic Simon. So Malcolm says, "I didn't need to edit it. It speaks for itself." So Claire jumps in, obviously being the diplomat of the scene, and she says, "Well, congrats, man. You know, I'm proud of you. We'll have to go for a drink sometime." And then Simon has to retort and says, "Wait, come here. I want to see it one more time before you send it in. You fucked it up. I know it."
Uh-oh.
All right. So as Malcolm and Simon pretty much walk out of the diner, Malcolm refuses to go back to his apartment. He's like, it's done, he tells Simon, you know. And Simon like comes back saying, "Fuck you, you're gonna ruin everything. I'm just trying to help you out, man." So Malcolm gets pissed. He punches him in the face, and you know, Simon flies back confused and disoriented, swings back at Malcolm, lands a shot, sending him down to the ground. Malcolm stands up slowly. There's like gutter slime running down his face. Yeah, it's
rough.
Yeah,
rough.
It was a rough. He fell on the worst patch of concrete. But he gets back up. He plants his feet, and Simon, you know, comes at him again, hits him again. He throws a punch. Simon falls to the ground, unconscious. Knockout move.
All right.
He drags him in. So Malcolm drags him to a corner, whips out a knife, cuts into his belly. Just guts all over the cold, damp pavement.
Whoa.
Ooh, good turn. All right.
What a twist. Oh, boy. Okay.
So Malcolm's breathing heavy.
Real.
Yeah, it gets real.
I was not expecting existential dread, but here we go.
Yeah.
So Malcolm, obviously still breathing heavily, walks away from Simon's limp, bleeding, empty body and starts to head home. So on the way, he pops back into the diner, covered in blood, and looks at Claire and says, "Last chance. Come with me now, and we'll drive off into the sunset." And she looks confused, and she says, "What's going on, Malcolm? Why are you acting this way? And why are you covered in blood?" He looks at her.
Fair question.
Yeah, very fair. Yeah.
He looks at her, her smile, her soft face.
Not today, maybe. I'll pass on that, yeah.
And he realizes that moment, he's never going to see her again, and he's got to leave. So he's running home, he packs a small bag, takes the package with his novella inside, looks at it, it's so clean, it's taped perfectly. And outside he hears the sirens, the screams, and he knows what's happening. He takes his bag, holding it in his arms, waiting for the inevitable, and in that moment he hears... bzz, bzz, bzz. The fly has landed on his chair, and he sits there unnoticed until... impact. Malcolm sits in his chair, forcefully, fighting back tears as the cops head down the street. And when he stands again to look at the window, he sees the lifeless, squished body of the fly, his only companion, his roommate, his friend. He wonders in that moment, was he observing me as I observed others? Was he the outcast, or was I?
So then the police come. Oh. So the police come flying up the stairs. The door breaks down, and Malcolm just stands there with insect insides on his pants. Which we didn't write that right. And his friends.
And one might argue that he had
insect blood
all over his shirt too.
Yeah.
Yes. Wow, yeah. And his friend's
and
blood.
And his friend's blood on his shirt.
Yeah.
And
yeah.
All he does is laugh.
That's what I meant. His friend was an insect.
Like a cockroach, maybe.
That's right.
Mm. Yeah, there you go. I was afraid they weren't insects, so I didn't want to say that.
What? All right. Fair.
I'm not a bug guy, Seth. Right. I mean,
I gotcha. I guess not.
Oh, dear.
And that is the end of our film.
Mm. Oh.
So okay. is the end like kind of a voiceover, like this is what like he's talking from prison sort of situation?
No, there's no voiceover. It's just kind of left up. It's kind of just ends, but you kind of surmise that this is obviously not going to have a pleasant ending for him.
Well, so it's ambiguous without actually being ambiguous. Well, like
correct.
I just want to, like, make sure that you really get the like, understanding of him, like, existentially questioning, was I the observer, was it the observer, etc.
I was gonna say, it's always a bummer when they, like, spell it out too much. Like,
we don't want hand-holding, yeah. Uh-huh.
So, the way I see that you could accomplish this is, like, the last shot is as you described it, but then there's, like, a slow zoom in on the fly's still intact eye with him glinting in it about a million times.
Okay.
Twist!
Yeah. Yeah, but like a nice ambiguous ending is really good. Like it's very hard to pull that off. Yeah.
Yeah. I was just trying to imagineer it.
Oh, sure. Yeah. Mm-hmm. Awesome.
We're waiting on those Disney contracts, so you know.
I was just
they
there.
Love our, they love take our, my calls. Our wholesome stories.
Yep. Sure enough.
So, no, that was really fun.
It was. Yeah. Awesome. I was curious because the name The Fly sort of both tells you a lot and nothing at the same time.
Yeah.
And I think you got some parts pretty close and then other parts that
there are like thematic things.
Yeah,
there are thematic things that are so absurdly close. I'm like
really
actually like my feet are bouncing because I have nervous energy.
So, electricity. Cool.
Does anyone have the synopsis pulled up?
Yeah, I've got it. Okay, cool. Right here. So, do you guys want the looks like one sentence IMDb synopsis of this movie?
Yes.
Of course.
Go. A brilliant but eccentric scientist begins to transform into a giant man/fly hybrid after one of his experiments goes horribly wrong.
Yeah, so they went a little less subtle with it.
So, so funny enough,
this movie was directed by David Cronenberg.
Oh, okay.
Yeah. Okay.
Yeah.
Yeah, so you know from that it's going to be gross.
Yeah,
there's a lot of body horror.
A lot of slime.
Yeah. They use the word flesh a lot. So much.
Yeah, that's true.
Yeah, and you guys are right. So it is the 80s. It takes place and was also filmed in the 80s, and so like almost no special effects. Lots of actual Nickelodeon slime effects, which is pretty great.
So it's also takes place in like a nondescript semi-city kind of location, and I just assume that's because it's Cronenberg, and they like filmed in Toronto, and apparently Toronto is boring. But the
loft thing is the same. Yeah.
Yeah.
Mm-hmm. Oh yeah, like a loft apartment in semi-suburban Chicago is kind of it's the exact same thing. Yep. Yeah.
Nice. Crushed it.
Yeah, so I guess the quick version is, like, some company pays him a bunch of money to, like, make teleportation happen, and he somehow...
So I think what it is, actually, Zach, is just he's a Wunderkind scientist who ends up, right. like, put on retainer somewhere, and he's just doing whatever he wants, and he happens to stumble on teleportation.
Sure. They just gave him a bunch of money, and they're like, you're smart, go do stuff.
Yeah.
And
that's
so
Jeff Goldblum, by the way.
Yes. No, like, literally, yeah. Yeah, this is a biopic, for sure. Yeah.
No, I was saying the scientist name, like, the scientist was played by Jeff Goldblum.
So okay.
Confusing.
Well, I stand by my statement.
He does play scientists a lot, though. Like, yeah. So, The Fly, Jurassic Park.
Okay.
I assume in Earth Girls Are Easy, he's an alien scientist of some sort.
No. Plausible. No, he's really not.
And then in Buckaroo Banzai Across the Fifth Dimension, he is a scientist.
I was about to mention Buckaroo Banzai.
One of the greatest movies of all time.
Yeah,
it's fun.
Is he in Independence Day as well? Am I making
that up?
Oh, yeah, he's
also
like
a scientist.
Computer scientist, yeah.
Yeah, the best
David! David, my mother lives in New York!
Yeah.
I have to call my David, therapist. The soda machine doesn't work! David!
These are much less good impressions.
Ooh,
Robin
no,
Williams, I'm going to make you a woman.
That actually is a spot on impression of that actor whose name I cannot remember.
I just Harvey Fierstein, I feel less bro. Good
about Oh, Harvey Fierstein. Yeah, of course. How could I forget that?
Also, he was in Mulan.
He was. He was the short soldier. Huh.
Oh, angry
one. Yeah, my favorite one.
So
what movie are we actually talking about?
I fucking can't remember anymore. Yeah.
No. Jeff Goldblum being a scientist, maybe?
Yeah.
There you go.
So he invents teleportation, but he only puts, like, inorganic things through it. Gina Davis comes in as a reporter love interest, and he's like, I want to go through this thing. And she's like, it doesn't seem entirely safe. And then,
this is where,
like,
all the flesh talks begins.
Yeah. Well, and also, so the thing you guys were describing where there's, like, he's kind of a weird eccentric outsider, and he has a lot of self-doubt, and he, like, there's a lot of that to it, and so that's, I think, what tips him on the, like, no, I'm gonna go through the thing, like, this is my destiny, I gotta do it.
Well, yeah, he and Gina end up together in this movie.
Yeah.
And they start getting to know each other pretty well.
Yeah,
and that's when he gets his inspiration for, like, the machine. It understands inorganic things because it's a computer, but it doesn't understand the flesh.
Yeah.
And when he's, like, worried that she's going to cheat on him, he gets drunk and goes into his own machine.
Yeah. Oh yeah, he's drunk at the time. That's true. Yeah. So yeah, he
by John Getz. So John Getz is Gina Davis's editor.
Yeah. And her
and he is a
lover.
Real piece of shit, that John Getz.
Yeah.
Nailed that one, too. Oof.
Wait, can I hear the douchebag theme again?
Yes, you can.
Yeah, no, that's very fitting for actual The Fly. Yeah.
Very effective. I love it.
So there's a lot of this, and then he goes through the thing, and there happens to be a fly that flew in there with him, and of course the machine being sort of not equipped for this splices all the information together, and they come out on the other side, and it seems fine, but then basically the rest of the movie is Goldblum is turning slowly into an actual fly because his DNA has been, like, mashed up with the flies.
Well, a fly-human hybrid.
Sure, yeah. And he slowly gets grosser and more insane and falls more in love with Gina, and it gets, like, weirdly possessive, like you guys were kind of mentioning, and yeah, it's...
She turns out to be pregnant. And she wants an abortion because she doesn't know when she got pregnant.
Yeah.
Pre or post fly splice.
Yeah.
And I have to say, this when that storyline came up, this immediately entered my list of best movies about abortion.
Yeah. They somehow talk about abortion intelligently in the 80s and for, like, 25 minutes. Like, it's weird.
Yeah. It's a big chunk of this movie. That's for sure.
Mm-hmm. Yeah.
Interesting.
Very strange.
while that's going on, Goldblum, whose character's name is Seth Brundle,
sure is,
starts to transform into what he refers to as the Brundle Fly.
Yep.
Basically, it looks like they strapped a bunch of slices of pizza to him. And he's just like you know Pizza the Hut from Spaceballs, yes. Right?
Spaceballs.
Oh, yeah.
Yeah. Yeah. So it's like that, except a little more humanoid-shaped.
Barely.
Yeah, barely, but still.
But, well, and so, I mean, like, the best part is Cronenberg, and there's just, like, shit falling off of him the whole time. Like, he pulls his own ear off at some point, and he's like, oh, weird, and then...
Oh, yeah, he's got, like, nondescript mason jars in his medicine cabinet full of his body parts that have fallen off.
Yeah.
Yeah.
And he refers to it as a museum of his former self.
Yeah.
Yeah. Yeah. A little bit of narcissism in there, yeah.
Yeah.
I don't remember.
Yeah, so he goes crazy.
Yeah.
He it starts off where he thinks it's improved him, but then he realizes it's like a cancer. So he comes up with an idea where if he kidnaps a person and puts them, he has an extra teleportation pod, like a prototype from way back when, and he's going to try to splice his DNA with another person's to just overrun the fly DNA. And like, I think the implication is I'm going to do this as many times as it takes to just eradicate the fly from me.
Yeah.
I didn't get that impression at all. I thought he just wanted to become a weird amalgam.
He eventually wanted
Gina, like, as a part of him. I think there was some of that.
Yeah,
he wanted to become
end,
one
I guess
with her.
That's...
Because... Well, he kidnaps her from her abortion to make her and the unborn baby part of him.
Yeah, exactly. Now that we're talking about it, it's way rougher than I remember. Kidnaps her from her abortion is like a Slayer song, I think. Like, that's fucking rough.
Does she start to turn into a fly because there's, like, a fly baby person inside of her?
Potentially.
So that's she has a nightmare where she gives birth to a maggot.
Yeah.
And David Cronenberg, I believe, plays the doctor delivering the maggot.
He sure does.
That nasty boy. Ooh, he's so nasty.
So there's also a lot of stuff about, like, he's turning into a fly and he has to use, like, acid vomit to eat now.
So we watched this all together, and I think at the time we were all pretty much like, that seems real.
That's true. We did all, dear listener, we were all together for once to watch this movie. Therefore,
we
didn't
dinner
take great
watching this movie.
Yep.
Oh,
true.
No, before and during dinner.
Yeah. We're like cooking and eating when watching this movie. And, you know, some of the fillings of the foods we made kind of reminded me of Jeff Goldblum's flesh.
Yeah, a little bit.
Yeah.
Thank God we didn't have, like, I'm Cinnabon icing or anything. That was
that's true.
He gets, like, hooked on sugar because he's a fly now. That's one of the things.
Yeah, of course. The ending is basically the giant malfunction. Everything goes wrong.
The douchebag. You missed the douchebag.
Yeah, Bernie Getz.
Yeah. You guys do it.
AIDS crack. Bernie Getz.
Yep.
Oh, Jesus.
Hypodermics on the show with my
rock and roll. Cola wars.
Drink once for singing.
Billy Joel's gonna come crash his car into us. Again.
Oh, yes.
Wait again. Boy, they.
So the douchebag former lover boss guy who she's kind of, Gina Davis has kind of turned to him because she has no one else to, like, confide in, because he's the only other person that knows what's going on and will believe her, comes to rescue her, and he brings a shotgun with him, and Goldblum, as the Brundlefly, vomits on his hand.
Melts
his hand off.
Yep.
And then vomits on his leg and melts his leg off.
Yeah.
And it's really fucked up. But then, Zach, this is where you left off, Zach. Sorry.
Right. No. Yeah, so there's this big, like, scuffle, and he's, like, half in the transportation chamber and half out. And, like, the button gets hit. And so instead of, like, human Goldblum hybrid, it's machine Goldblum hybrid. And he comes out the other side, and he's, like, half this, like, weird... chamber door. Thing.
Yeah.
Yeah, it's literally a door like sticking out of his head. Yeah. Half fly human thing. And
this is after he shed his Goldblum shell.
Yeah.
Right. Oh yeah, he literally cracks out of Goldblum and like wings come out. It's like totally bonkers. Yeah.
Yeah.
And yeah, so I might be making this up just because I want it to be the thing that happens so much, but I think he looks up at Gina Davis and does a "kill me."
He doesn't say it. Yeah, oh, but okay. he uses his weird deformed fly hand, pulls the shotgun towards his head.
Oh, it's so much worse. It's so much worse.
And she blows his head off and then like starts to openly weep and fade to black. So the ambiguous, not ambiguous ending is in the real movie.
Nice.
I don't think there's any ambiguity in there.
you don't know what the baby's going to be.
He tied a little bow on it. I think that was fine. Yeah.
Hey, we still don't know if Gina Davis has a fly baby.
Yeah, that's the ambiguity.
There was a The Fly 2, if I recall correctly.
Yeah, I read a little about it. Was. We can talk about it if we want, but you know.
Mm-hmm. Okay.
It's not really interesting.
Yeah.
Sure. But yeah.
So that's the real movie. I'm glad you guys had a slime sidewalk scene because we needed the slime potion.
Yes, very true. We checked that box. That was good. That was good.
Mm-hmm. I like the Nickelodeon reference because I hadn't thought about Double Dare in a long time.
Oh my god, no! And like the slime in this movie might as well have been like Cronenberg just can't help himself with that shit. Like it's out of control. Yeah, it's really good.
David Cronenberg's The Fly, brought to you by Nickelodeon's Choice Awards. Yeah. Is that what we're pitching right now?
Yeah, and then in the last scene, like a whole a bucket of it gets jumped on Gina Davis, and then it's fade to credits. Like that's the alternate DVD ending.
And then she goes, "What?" And a bucket of water gets dropped on her because of that one Canadian show that Alanis Morissette was on.
What are you talking about now?
Degrassi? That's the only one I know.
Yeah, I was going to say.
No, it's a different one.
Was it
if listeners know what show I'm talking about, please write it.
I doubt anyone, but all right.
Was it Corner Gas? Are you talking about Corner Gas?
No, it wasn't Corner Gas.
I'm very lost.
It might have been, you know what? It might have been the Red Green Show.
I was going to mention the Red Green Show also. Oh, man.
Again with the faking TV. What have we become?
Apparently nobody else except for Lee and I watched nothing but Canadian television as children.
Yeah,
for real.
That one somehow.
There with my puff sleeves waiting to find the conclusion of Anne of Green Gables, but you know.
Yikes. Oh god.
That awful Gilbert Blythe.
Oh yeah.
Anyway.
Oh man,
Zach's gonna cut that out.
I'm fucking losing my mind over here. So I think there's a lot of good crossover there. I think definitely. So we had talked a lot about this when we jumped into the horror genre. There's the titles are always interesting because they either give away nothing or way too much.
Uh-huh.
And I think this is a weird in between one that is kind of both.
Yeah. Are you scoring these for your guests then? Like, do you provide us with a scorecard or a percentage so we know like how well we did, you know, according to the three of you then?
Yeah.
Is our top five ranking?
Well, I can give you the IMDb score.
Wait, Cannon, do you mean closeness to the movie or like goodness of the movie?
Yeah. Yes.
Which one?
Well, goodness we'll get to at the end.
Yeah.
But as far as closeness goes, you guys really nailed a lot of the thematic stuff.
Yeah,
like,
it's true.
The lonely genius, the isolation, the like failed artist kind of. Because even though he's a scientist in the movie, they portray him a lot as a failed artist.
Yeah,
I think so.
I would watch our movie.
Yeah.
Oh,
hell yeah. Yeah.
Well, I want to see the original.
I was wondering. So, Seth.
Uh-huh.
I know. I think now we want to watch the original.
it's very good.
You should
watch
it's pretty good.
It's very good. Yeah.
Just as like a little spoiler for the end.
Yeah.
Seth, were you also getting a very Barton Fink kind of feel from their movie?
Son of a bitch. God damn it. I will not stand for this.
It seemed a little Finky, maybe.
a little Finkish. A little Five-ish Finkle.
Yeah. Oh, Five-ish Finkle is involved in this? Oh, boy.
He's attached. Because, correct me if I'm wrong, Seth, but... Or if anyone else has seen Barton Fink a bunch.
No one else has ever seen Barton Fink in the history of the world. God damn it.
Well, there's the theme of like the tortured writer and an actual fly being involved. Like, there's a fly motif in Barton Fink, right?
I seem to recall something like that, but I was thinking more like the wallpaper, and I'm kind of conflating wallpaper and flypaper and things like that.
Oh, that might be it.
Mm-hmm.
So one of the things I thought you guys, your movie made me think of, was a little Lynch. Did you guys, was that any, am I off base?
No, not at all, actually.
No one has seen Barton Fink.
That's not even a Lynch movie.
But we are big fans of Eraserhead.
Notably during watching this movie, I didn't take many notes, but I do have a couple notes.
Okay.
You guys want to hear the random crazy crap I saw this time?
Absolutely.
Okay, so the first one is the score is by Howard Shore, which is interesting, right? Because that is famously the composer who did the Lord of the Rings series.
Oh, sure.
So it's got this really dramatic, full orchestral score.
It does.
Which is pretty great.
Yeah. I did look him up. He actually has done all but one of Cronenberg's movies.
He's done a lot of work, and it's always this really dramatic, you know, bum, 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 bum.
Which is probably why I was going through a list of his movies and couldn't remember any of the scores.
Sure.
They probably are all very similar.
I'm guessing they sound a little bit like maybe a little movie called Robin Hood, Prince of Thieves.
No, interesting.
Save it.
Okay, that's John Williams. Sorry.
I feel obligated to mention Kanan and JG had a score to their movie.
Yeah, and I actually have to point out that Robin Hood, Prince of Thieves is Michael Kamen.
Oh,
you're definitely right.
This is Kanan's wheelhouse. He even
conducts the orchestra in the music video for the Bryan Adams theme,
oh,
right?
Oh, God.
Oh, boy.
Yeah. Oh, boy.
Deep cuts. Okay.
All right. So, I like that movie a lot, I guess.
Okay, let me get through the rest of my weird crap, which is only like seven things long this time. I love Gina Davis's pleather outfit. Right there
the
at the beginning.
Is pretty strong. Yeah, yeah.
It was
I think we're coming out of an era when, like, everybody is talking about, oh, that Gina Davis, she used to be a model, and now she's an actress, and they're like, let's just dress her like a model.
Yeah.
Yeah. I think, Gina was probably, like, plateaued at this point, but man, the Blooms is just, he is peak Blooms in this. Like, and they really take advantage of it, too. Like, he has his shirt on, like, less than 50% of the time, easily.
Oh, yeah, like, that's true. Oh, yeah. Man.
The vocal tics are huge in this movie too. Like, even his computer recognizes his vocal tics as a password.
He was coming into his own for sure.
And I mean, speaking to that, there's one point where Gina Davis like calls up what's his name Getz. I'm gonna keep calling him Bernie Getz because I can't remember his first name.
Good.
She like calls him up
the douchebag,
and she says, "Oh, I'm on to something big." And then I feel like all three of us simultaneously said, "Yeah, that dick."
Yeah, we did. That happened. Because
we're children.
Yep.
Yeah.
And then the only other note I have is it says, and I quote, a throwaway line from The Fly was the impetus for the eggplant emoji.
Oh.
And I don't know what that means, but
I don't remember any of that.
I'm guessing it was overtly sexual.
If Goldblum is like cooking eggplant for her or something.
Oh, spicy eggplant. Yeah.
And it's very sexual innuendo-y. And then we were like, we were like, hey, we're too old to know what emojis are all about. And Lee goes, wait, is that the dick one? And we went, yeah, that's the dick one. And then it was a whole thing. Yeah.
Yeah. It was great. It's a lot of, yeah. It's a lot more inside jokes when we're all in the same place. It's,
yeah. Yeah. Yeah.
I didn't think it was possible.
I guess you really had to be there for that story that you just told. Yeah. But okay.
Oh man, I love it. I love it.
Oh, one thing about this movie, the line "Be afraid, be very afraid" is actually from this movie, and I didn't realize it.
I didn't know that either.
Interesting. Huh.
Yeah, that is interesting.
Huh. Yeah. All right.
It's like overtaken the movie. It's just something that's famous on its own now.
Yeah. Yeah. Mm-hmm.
Yeah.
Nice. Cool.
All right, so should we do the ratings and the whatnot?
Yeah, do you
want... Well, I had one or two things I wanted to bring up, if that's okay with you guys.
Oh, yeah, sure.
Oh, fucking...
There is an opera based on this movie.
What?
No.
Yeah. Howard Shore. Wait, is it Shore
Cats? It's not Cats.
An opera. No, it's not Cats.
Turns out...
Turns out Cats not an opera. Yeah.
Turns out it's Joseph and the Amazing Technicolor Dreamcoat.
Oh, fun.
Also, notably not an opera.
What do we know?
I know. Anyway. I know. It's Boris Godunov. Yeah.
No, it's just called The Fly.
The Fly by Baradin or Rimsky-Korsakov. Or, you know,
I'm sure, Kanan, do you know any of this? You'd be the only one.
I mean, I know okay. Things. I drink and I know things.
Okay. Take that, listeners.
Oh, dear. Yep.
there's an opera written by the composer, Howard Shore.
Mm-hmm. Okay.
Directed, it was performed once. It was commissioned Ooh. By some opera house, well, I think in Italy.
Hey, that's better than Spider-Man Turn Off the Dark.
So. Yeah. Ooh. Commissioned by
Bono and the Edge.
Schmaven Schronenberg that one time.
Well, Cronenberg did direct the Fly opera, the stage production of it.
Oh, perfect. Oh, God, so many janitors. Oh, the ooze. Oh, God.
That's why they only did it once, because they ruined the theater.
Yeah, they're like, well, burn it down. Oh, we're done.
Yeah. Like a 17th century opera house that is just covered in Cronenberg goop.
Oh, God. You know, we should have known better. We should have known better.
Also, there are several epilogues that were filmed for this movie that none of them were used, and pretty much all of them involved like resolving the pregnancy storyline.
Oh, but, really?
Yeah, they all tested poorly, so they decided to leave them out.
I could maybe see that.
Yeah, there is no good ending to that. Yeah,
the complaint was that watching her blow his brains out was so draining that no one was paying attention to the after things.
I buy it.
Yeah, but wouldn't it have been funny if as she's blowing his brains out, there's two little wings, like, popping out of her belly?
Oh,
well,
yeah.
Okay.
So I mean, that'd be very Cronenberg, to be fair. Yeah.
Yeah.
Yeah. Most of the epilogues involve her having a dream where she gives birth to a normal baby that grows fly wings and flies away into the sun.
Cool.
Oh, wait. Wait, it's like, I'm too weird to live, and it flies into the sun? Cause like...
Well, like, into the distance, into the sun.
Oh, so it's not, so it's not like...
an Icarus.
Yeah, an Icarus, I was going to say.
Yeah.
Which
ties into...
Doesn't quite fit the tone, but maybe. Yeah.
Yeah. Which ties into my next thing. Mel Brooks produced this movie.
Whoa, weird.
Oh, yeah. Man.
This was one of his... one of his 80s movies that he produced that would shock people, along with David Lynch's The Elephant Man.
Oh
God.
Sure. Yeah. Yeah.
A movie notoriously that funny also movie. A movie that also contains some weird surrealistic dream sequences. So, yep.
All right.
Just sticking with that. I guess the last thing I wanted to mention, would you guys have thought this movie was, like, successful financially? We're describing it now, we all watched it. I just want to go around. What do you think it would have been popular?
I mean, based on the cast, and, I mean, at that time, I could see it being a little successful. I mean, Yeah. Looking back on it now, I mean, I haven't seen it, but it does sound entertaining, but part of me also thinks that it wouldn't be, but maybe at that time.
It's like weird as fuck.
Yeah, it's just, totally strange in the 80s, but with the cast, it could have drawn a crowd.
My hope for all Jeff Goldblum films is that it's a low budget sleeper.
Yeah.
So essentially, you're both right, because it was a low budget sleeper, but it was also insanely successful.
Really?
Like,
really? Really?
It was the number one movie in America 2 weeks
wow.
in a row.
Wow.
Shit.
That's
in
impressive.
1986? It is a movie.
Yeah.
Hmm. Well, I guess my favorite movie of all time didn't come out till 1987, so...
They were actually nominated in the same year as Saturn Awards, so...
Oh!
Seth, are you talking about fucking Barton Fink again? Is that what you're talking about?
No, he's thinking about...
Well, there's the bleep. There's the two. Yeah, there you go.
this movie, which I can't stress enough, is about Jeff Goldblum melting into a puddle.
And then assisted suicide, effectively. Yeah, it's dark.
Yeah, dark. By a woman who spends a good portion of the movie attempting to get an abortion.
Yeah.
That movie really struck a chord with America.
Wait, was
seems
this
about right? 1986. Yeah.
Yeah, was this Jimmy Carter? What were we doing in 1986?
This is Reagan, Zach.
Jimmy Carter? What in the hell are you?
I barely know who's president now.
I'm like 10 years off, bro.
Ah, well,
all
right.
He's, exactly 10 years off.
Yeah.
I mean, Reagan's America was a little rough, I guess, yeah.
Hey, yeah. I mean, we hadn't even started the war on drugs yet.
Well, yeah, fair.
And we all know how successful that entire endeavor was.
Wildly.
Yeah. Yeah, the incarceration level is super low and no one's addicted.
Yep. Yep. Oh, this podcast is just for a audience 10 years from now, and everything's perfect.
But I can kind of see it. So, like, Cronenberg, this is not his first rodeo, right? Like, he does
this
some stuff.
He had a lot of cult success at this point. Yeah. This is, to this date, his most successful film.
I wouldn't have guessed that.
I buy that.
No, I would not have guessed
just
that.
Just based on the name and whatnot.
And then we've never seen it.
Yeah,
we usually see only successful films.
Yeah. Yeah. <I'm just kidding. laughs> he had a bunch. They are all very similar to this, not in like subject matter, but in like ooze and whatnot. Yeah.
Thematically and visual effects styles. Yeah, there's a lot of similarities.
Wait, is Cronenberg? Didn't he? Is he alive or did he recently die?
I think he's still alive.
He's alive.
Is he? Yeah. Okay.
Yeah.
Yeah, I'm pretty sure.
I mean, he's Canadian, so I mean, I don't know if we can say he was ever really alive.
Oh, fuck. All right, so Peoria, all of Canada. Shit.
It's okay.
Don't worry. I don't.
Yeah, there's only 12
I
people.
Don't think they have,
and they only watch Quarter Gas.
And we have established Kanan and JG are all of our listeners, so
okay. Yeah,
all are American as far as
besides,
I recall, so.
they don't have the internet or podcasts in Canada, so
no, yeah, still well, semaphore.
They just got the Motorola Razr last year.
Man,
oh dear, yeah.
I remember desperately wanting one of those, but not being able to afford one.
Yes, same.
Yeah, they were mad expensive.
Middle school was tough. I agree. Yeah. all right, let's do the thing. Lee, kick us off. Ratings. Do you have the IMDb up?
Yeah,
the
I do.
Real one?
And that is 7.5.
Ooh.
Out of 129,000 votes.
Shit,
that's
a
pretty
bunch.
Good.
Okay,
it's pretty
7,
good.
7.5,
yeah.
Strong. Yeah.
Yeah.
All right.
For our fly on the wall fly.
Yeah.
I really enjoyed it. Mm-hmm. In general, my tastes trend toward, I have two spectrums, and one of them is dumb, stupid comedy. And the other one is weird, experimental, art-housey director kind of pieces.
Mm-hmm.
And that's exactly what this felt like to me. I could see some, I really enjoyed it. So I would give this one a 7.5, actually.
Mm-hmm. Okay.
Solid.
Yeah.
Yep.
Now, The Fly, the Cronenberg slime factory that is mm-hmm. The Fly. Oh, it's really good. I'm gonna give it a 7.6. So,
ooh, yeah, close.
It's
okay.
It's a movie of another type.
Pretty close.
They were of equivalent quality, mm-hmm. I think.
Yeah.
Beautiful.
Yeah.
Okay.
Awesome.
Seth, what do you think?
So Fly on the Wall styles, I kept thinking that it was very magical realism like. Which is my favorite genre of literature for sure. You have all that like experimental Mexican and South American work in the last 50 years that I quite enjoy. So I am going to give it a 7.6.
Oh snap! All right,
that is high praise.
Wait, oh god, please give The Fly a 7.5 so we can s'mores.
Okay,
build a movie.
Spoiler, what I was obviously going to do that.
Oh, I'll cut it out.
Well, okay, so I guess the regular Fly gets a 7.5.
Damn
story.
It!
Hey, Zach, what did you think about these movies?
7.5 for both of them. Fuck everything.
I said, I've known you for like 13 years now. Do you want to rethink those numbers a little bit?
Ooh, that's true.
Oh, snap.
I have
constantly getting himself in trouble.
Oh, yeah, that's true.
He
yeah.
knows.
Stop. I have also never met David Cronenberg, so yeah, that's a fair point. I would go Actual Fly, I think, is very good. Definitely worth watching.
Yeah, it is worth watching.
Yeah.
It's also like... It's 96 minutes. It is
tight.
Yeah,
tight.
Yeah.
Oh, okay. So this is
like,
where we...
Immediately after that, I feel like we watched Dracula 2. So,
we did.
Yeah.
Oh, my God, we did. It was so bad.
Oh, it was rough.
In case anyone's wondering, there are sequels to Dracula.
Sure are.
Unauthorized, perhaps? Yeah.
I don't know. But even by comparison.
Yeah. So yeah, let's go behind the curtain a little here. We had talked about maybe spoiling this. We're recording these a bit out of order, and the next two episodes are movies, let's say, not as good, to put it lightly.
Yeah,
definitely
okay.
Not as good.
Yeah, to say
so
the
we
least.
We have recorded our pretty much entire month of October's worth of shows.
Yeah.
And
the Spooktacular
is Head and Shoulders, the best movie that we've watched
knees
and toes.
By far, yeah.
Oh
yeah.
My god,
nice.
Yeah, it's also
we need some Selsun Blue up in here for all the Head and Shoulders.
There
we
go.
Have.
There we go.
Ooh.
Yeah. No.
Selenium.
Especially.
Because it kills aliens in that movie.
Zach, you're gonna have to bleep that out.
Yeah. Sure enough. Oh, that'll be the
just
second
bleep out what
that
gets
movie
killed.
That we have to bleep out. Yeah. So we talk about this later, but like length in horror movies is crucial, and this one was like mm-hmm. pretty reasonable. Yeah, so yeah, I would agree with the populace and say 7.5 on that one. Kanan and JG's, I think I'm going higher, actually. I'm going like a 7.8 on that.
What?
One.
That's a lot better.
Whenever I see a movie that's like open ended, like you had it, and it
yeah.
like leaves a lot to the viewer.
I like that. I like it a lot. Yeah.
Yeah, it's so good. It's so good. So yeah, I very much enjoy that kind of thing. Also, sound effects were just
mm-hmm.
great.
Yeah, that's true.
Wonderful.
Oh yeah, that is very true. I hadn't factored those in, but like a very Howard Shore experience.
Yeah. Yeah.
We're going to send you some quality sound bites so you can use.
Oh, yeah. Oh, yeah. all right. Well, I guess that'll do it for us. Coming up next week, we have, I think, Seth doing Insidious?
Yeah, probably the best movie any of us have ever heard me describe.
Oof. Mini spoilers.
Yeah,
it's a real banger. Oh, it's a banger.
Yeah,
it's pretty fun. I enjoy it.
Wait. Hold on. Did is there anything that you guys wanted to add? Zach kind of just cut you off there, continuing to be an asshole like he has been this whole time.
Oh, yeah, might be.
We're making him the bad guy, Seth.
Is there anything that we wanted to add?
Yeah.
No. I don't think so.
Yeah. Who's the asshole now, buddy?
I think Zach's interrupting was
damn
perfectly
it, my plan
timed.
Backfired.
Yeah. How dare you give the guests another word? How dare you?
Oh, I'm going to slide down the power rankings even further.
Oh, no.
Oh, yeah.
I don't think you can get into negative numbers, son.
That also works out in our long line of guest abuse, too.
I think we can report only some mild abuse. Would you agree, JG? Mildly. Okay. Yeah.
Oh, okay. Wow. All right. That seems generous. But
yeah, that does seem generous. We're pretty terrible.
Tempted to say fuck you, but that just seems aggressive.
It's a bit on the nose.
Yeah.
All right. So Seth is doing Insidious and the Spooktacular continues.
Should be really good.
Yeah.
Cool.
All right. Well, I think that'll do it.
All right. Yeah.
Awesome.
Well, thanks for having us. This was fun.
Yeah, absolutely.
Yeah, thank you guys.
Kanan and JG won, but Seth.
They definitely did it better.
Seth did it. They did it better. Seth did it best.